The Randy and Rebecca Hayes Foundation has helped bring you the following program. This is not NPR, National Public Radio.
One warning is to the head. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART, 1-800-836-9278. A few stories I'd like to talk about tonight. Columbine photos have been leaked from the Sheriff's Department. They weren't supposed to do this, and now there's photos of the bombs that were used, the pipe bombs. Grisly pictures of the victims, much to their parents and families' regret. So we'll talk about that and my own experience with Columbine crime scene photos. When I saw those photos, now they have not been released for the past 3 years, and now it's in the news that they're out, but I'll tell you about 3 years ago when I saw the photos and the denial by the Sheriff's Department. I saw some of the photos. Also, a doctor working in an Indian hospital funded by the government. Turns out that he's a convicted sex molester, a child molester, and he's been working as an OBGYN for 8 years on a reservation in Arizona. In Colorado, the legislature is introducing a divorce bill that they want to reduce the number of divorces, so they would insert, if a couple has children, they would insert a one-year delay and have mandatory counseling before they would permit a divorce by law. Obviously, the divorce rate has skyrocketed to over 50%. Just over 50% of couples getting married will be divorced. So what is the right way to lower the divorce rate? Is this bill a good idea? Well, it's a step in the right direction. I tell you, if I hear that again, I think I'm going to... We've taken so many steps in the right direction, we should have fallen off the cliff by now. But what's the deal with how do you lower the divorce rate? And then also... Hey, did you hear about the Roman Catholic priest who had committed a sexual crime against a teenager in California? And so could you believe that? I just can't even believe the church would do this. They moved him to Connecticut. Well, the cops have found him. You know, if they would have moved him to Boston, he probably would have blended in better. And then finally, there's a press release out. I'll read you the title of the press release and the subtitle. And then later in the show, I'll run the whole thing by you. Of course, you can see it at the web, this press release at shadowgov.com. But here's the press release for immediate release. Shadow government official website. The secret shadow government has a publicly accessible website, and that's a press release. So why don't I start with that? I'm going to start with that, then we'll get to the stories. Here's the press release, and we know that this has gone to media outlets all over the country. Now, I'll just read it to you verbatim. Of course, our shadow government is secret, said a knowledgeable official wishing to remain anonymous. Still, the public should know of the existence of its internet homepage on the World Wide Web. America's shadow government is run in secrecy from an undisclosed location, yet its official website, shadowgov.com, has garnered millions of hits since its launch in February 1999. Currently, this website's homepage describes the shadow government's wish list of responses to the 9/11 terrorist attack. For example, under the heading Airline Security, the website states, "The hijackings were not a failure of airport security personnel, but were a failure of security strategy. Hijackers will always be able to get weapons of some type onto airplanes. Pilots should be armed." Right? And then the press release concludes, again, quoting the source, the unnamed source, "Because of the nature of the beast, it is impossible to confirm that shadowgov.com is actually the official site. After all, it is the shadow government. Looking at the site, you see that, as is the nature of politics, the views of the shadow government and the actual government do not always agree. Personally," said the source, "I think we'd all be better off if the shadow government were running this country outright." And then at the bottom of any press release, there's a section for contacts for additional information. This contact, and then it says none. It is, after all, a shadow government. So there you have it. By the way, if anybody goes on the web at shadowgov.com, they could click on press release, print it out, and send it to your local newspaper. Just fax it to them or email it to them. And we'll see. We'll see if any media outlets pick up on that. It's funny. Okay, now, this is not funny. Out of Washington, D.C., this sex offender was treating Indians in Arizona. And the healthcare agency that hired the doctor, they had laws that said you're not supposed to hire convicted sex offenders, but they did anyway. Dr. Thomas Michaelis, he spent time in an Ohio prison 10 years ago for trying to molest four teenage girls. Well, it says for trying, so we don't know the details of the story. He then worked for 8 years as an OBGYN, an obstetrician gynecologist in an Indian Health Service hospital in Arizona, and he was getting paid $100,000 a year by the government. Even though there's a law that prohibits the hiring of sex offenders in agencies serving American Indians. What a stupid law that is. Isn't that a stupid law? You can't hire, the government cannot hire a sex offender for any agency serving American Indians. Now, why is that a stupid law? Well, how about Portuguese? How about any government agency that serves Portuguese people? How about Belizeans? So we need a law that says the government cannot hire any convicted sex offender who services Belizeans. How about people from Kenya, Canada, for that matter? How about Coloradans or people from Massachusetts? The government cannot hire any convicted sex offenders that may service people from Massachusetts. See how our laws are inane. You know, inane public school teachers, you know what that means?
Can a Christian lie without sinning? If the Nazis were at your door, is it a sin to lie to them so they don't find the family of Jews living in your attic? Was it wrong for the Hebrew midwives to lie to save the Israelite babies in Exodus chapter 1? And if that was immoral, then why did God reward them? Are Christians today nicer than God? Would the average Christian condemn Jesus if he came back today and called people names like swine, Matthew 7, or a dog, Matthew 15, or a snake or a brood of vipers, Matthew 23? Today, that would be considered unchristlike by most Christians, but he said it. And in an effort to make you more Christ-like, we've put together a 6-tape audio album called Nicer Than God. It's available for $29.95. Get the information you won't receive in the average Nicer Than God church. The world we live in is an immoral, disgusting mess. The problems parents face in raising children today are enormous and growing. So to help you in your responsibility to raise godly young men and women, we at Bob Benyard Live are offering the Train Up a Child package. The first item is a 100-page book written by Michael and Debbie Pearl called To Train Up a Child. With over 300,000 copies in print, this is an invaluable resource for parents based on biblical truth, not psychobabble. And always easy to understand and clear-thinking, Pastor Bob Benyard rounds out this teaching tool. Included in the package are two sermons on child-rearing delivered by Pastor Benyard to his congregation in Denver, Colorado. Order the Train Up a Child package for $14.95 and get your child on the right path.
Welcome back, Bob Benyard Live, 1-800-8-NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. So this sex offender doctor, he was hired by the Indian Health Service, and then he was just fired this past year after 8 years working there. Of course, during that time, he had examined hundreds of women at the Phoenix Indian Medical Center, and he claims, and I'm sure it's easy to check, that he had registered with local authorities as a sex offender. You see, in our country, we manage the child molestation problem. We don't have a war against child molestation, and we don't eradicate it. We manage it. We manage it. We say, okay, now you sex offenders, that's fine, as long as you register. Yeah, just register. And here in Denver, the two young girls that were kidnapped and tricked into drinking alcohol, made drunk and sexually molested, and then thankfully they were not killed and they're back with their family now. But that they were walking home from a Denver public school, 5 and 8 year old girls. Don't like the sound of that to start with. But the cops had just the previous week met with some parents saying, well, in your district, there are 37 registered sex offenders living here in your district. Oh, great. Great. So, yeah, instant message. We have to add the Eskimos too. We need a law that says don't hire a convicted sex offender to serve as Eskimos and Norwegians. What a stupid law. How many ethnic groups are in the world? Do we need a law for each one? How about don't hire convicted sex offenders to provide medical care for female veterans? Don't do that. And how about for male veterans? Well, we need a law for them too. How about for children? How about for the elderly? I bet just on this one aspect of not hiring convicted sex offenders, to provide medical services for different categories of people, we could probably end up with maybe 500 to 1,000 laws on the books if we really wanted to do it right. You know, not a half-hearted job. Everyone deserves the full protection of the United States government. So what group should not be represented here? In fact, I think we need a law that says that the government is prohibited from hiring a convicted sex offender to provide services to convicted sex offenders. Because after all, they're people too. I tell you, only if we had a decent law, this would have never happened. Only if we had a good law that banned the hiring of convicted sex offenders to work on Indians, then this would have never happened. Oh, wait a minute, we do have that law. And it did happen. Well, only if we would just execute convicted sex offenders, then we wouldn't have to worry about hiring them. We would not have to worry about hiring them. They could get a job in hell. Now, what would they do exactly in hell? I don't know. Okay. All right. Somebody instant messaged us. I say we use them to test out the drugs we use to put dogs to sleep. Now, okay, I got to think through that one. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. All right. Now, the Columbine photos that have been leaked, and parents fear that now that these photos are out, we don't know how many people have them, but they may eventually end up on the internet. That would be a tragedy. I was in the Jefferson County Jail. Columbine High School is in Jefferson County. Jefferson County Sheriff's Department, they're the primary ones that responded, along with Denver SWAT and Arapahoe County, and counties from all over the Denver metro area responded. But Jefferson County was in charge, and I was in the Jeffco County Jail when Columbine happened. I remember the prediction I made on my show. We used to do the show from jail. And the prediction I made on the show after Columbine was that Columbine would become the best school in the country. It wouldn't be recognized for being the school that produced mass murder, the most dysfunctional, the worst school in the country. It would be the best. And sure enough, Hillary Clinton comes here and makes really famous her statement, "We are Columbine. We are Columbine." Well, when I was in the Jefferson County Jail at that time for a few months, been there before, probably will be there again. At that time, I was there for spanking my stepson 5 swats on the backside. And we had multiple jury trials and appeals, and I won an appeal and and eventually they got me in jail. And I was on the night crew for, you become a trustee. And then that way they can get rid of you sooner because they really don't want you there and there are too many people there anyway. So at the time they were building a big new jail. I don't know if it's finished yet. I haven't stayed up on it. But we said back then, if you build it, they will come. That's one thing liberals can never have too many of, and that's jail cells. Anyway, 2 o'clock in the morning, at 2 a.m., I'm out with the crew cleaning the jail, mopping up, dusting, whatever you do to clean a jail, and laughing. We laughed all night long, every night. We've got a big dumpster in a large freight elevator that we're bringing to, you know, you also pick up the trash throughout the jail. And we clean the, not only the cells, but the sheriff's offices where the sergeants and investigators and whoever works out of the jail complex, we clean their places too. And the night before we get done, and the buzz among the inmates is that there are pictures of Columbine on the desks of some of the investigators. And the inmates are talking about seeing the pictures. And they were given some details about what they had seen. And that was somewhat shocking. And you're in jail and you think, well, jail's filled with criminals, and criminals are also liars. So who knows? The next night, 2 a.m., we're in the freight elevator with the dumpster. And here in the dumpster are photos blown. They're like 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper with maybe 2 square inch photos or even smaller in rows filling up the whole sheet. And it's pictures of Columbine, aerial photos, and then there are pipe bombs, zillion pictures of pipe bombs. And the pictures I saw were crime scene photos, but I didn't see any of the victims. The next day at dinner, one of the inmates, big guy, big heavy set guy, at dinner, we all eat together, play chess, gamble, watch cable TV, just have a great old time. One of the big guys said he was so sick he couldn't eat. and he was a big guy. And he said that the reason he was sick to his stomach was because he saw the Columbine pictures and he saw the victims. And he was describing who, he wasn't sure who everybody was, but the guns and bullet wounds and who was laying on or near a gun and slumped over in a chair and just whatever. However he described it, this is, what, 3 years ago? And so that was, of course, rather startling. So I informed one of the parents of the Columbine victims, and they called in a local TV reporter, Ward Lucas, Ward is actually a great guy. He's a Christian, a creationist. He likes to debate evolutionists. And real neat guy. Well, Ward interviewed me. He went to try to talk to some of the other inmates. I don't know if he got through to any of them. And then he went to the sheriff, John Stone. And of course, the sheriff's department utterly denied any possibility. They said it could not possibly have happened. And those aerial photos were really the photos of the high school in Evergreen, Colorado, because that looks just like Columbine. And the pipe bombs were really photos from a different crime or a different crime scene. And we're like, yeah, right. Right. There are pipe bomb photos all the time. A dozen different pipe bombs on sheets hanging out in the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department a few weeks after Columbine. Right. And even if that were true, you mean you normally take photos of crime scenes and leave them out where the criminals have access to them? So at the time, the Sheriff's Department was so adamant to this TV reporter, Ward Lucas, so absolutely adamant that it is completely impossible. There's no way those inmates could get access to those photos. There's no way. And, you know, it's hard to take the word of a bunch of crooks. So the story was never run. But now it seems to have a little bit of new life breathed into it, because headline in the Rocky Mountain News, page one, Columbine photos leaked. And I seem to recall I do recall one inmate was interested in selling some of the photos. And when I saw the photos, I thought, well, I could grab these, bring them to my cell, and get them to the parents. But of course, that's a bit difficult. After you get done on your night shift, you're searched. It's a rather thorough search. After I got a little more comfortable there a few weeks later, I realized you could smuggle anything you want in from your night shift. Nope, no problem whatsoever. Like one guy had a printout. I don't know how many inmates are in that jail, 800, whatever it is. He got a printout out of the trash can of some sheriff's department employee of every inmate in the jail and what their criminal record was and what their sentence was and what they were in for. And let me tell you, that printout, so he smuggled that back into his cell, and that was being read for a few weeks. Well, not a few weeks, over a week. And that one printout, boy, that caused a lot of trouble in that jail. Because now the inmates, who lied about what, who, you know, who's a child molester, and now everybody wants to beat him up. And so, see, the system works. At times, the system works. That's good to hear. We've got this story. Somebody just emailed us. An inmate has been charged with directing child pornography operation from within his jail cell. In Bridgeport, Connecticut, now that's where the priest headed, right? In California, he went to Hartford, Connecticut to hide out. Maybe he heard about this guy in jail, but he should have gone to Boston. He would have blended in. But a 28-year-old inmate has been arrested on child pornography charges. How do they arrest him? He's already in jail. What are they going to threaten him? You're going to send you to jail? He's already in jail. Goodbye, Denver.
All lines are busy at this time. For updated information on Bob's national tour and ShadowGov demonstrations, press 1. For Bob's mailing address, press 2. And if you're an atheist, an anarchist, an evolutionist, a humanist, a communist, a socialist, a garden variety, sodomite, a Democrat, or a transgendered freak of nature, press 3. If you're ordering by credit card, please leave your name and phone number, and your call will be returned.
You must be them Inyok people. Well, I'm not like any of those things that I just heard in that list of things he just said. I'm not an evolutionist or nothing like that. But I would just want to know if you're the guy I've seen on Politically Incorrect. Yeah, that's it. I just wanted to tell you that I think you guys rock. You guys are really cool, and you need to keep up the good work. So this is George from Jersey. Out.
Hi, I'm a garden variety sodomite and a transgendered freak of nature, and I'd really love a call back from Bob Inyok, so if you could give me a buzz. My name's Cody Lightholt. My phone number is 7. I'd really appreciate being straightened out because I'm sick of being a dirty fag. So thanks a bunch, Bobby. Talk to you later.
Hey, Mr. Inyok, I have actually viewed your website, and then I saw you on Politically Incorrect 3 times, and, well, I don't know what to say about you. All I can say is that I had an uncle that died of AIDS. I'm sure you refer to it as the gay plague. All I can say is that the majority of gays in this country are better people than you. Better than you or any other thing that you could ever be. I hate you, and I wish you had cancer.
I have never in my life heard such a hypocrite as this Bob Inyok. How in the world do you dare put him on the air? How can he judge anybody? He is terrible. You ought to be ashamed to even have him walking around.
Hey, Bob, I'm drunk. And guess what? God ain't gonna help me on this one. Take a guess of what I'm drinking. I'm drinking some vodka and some strawberry crush, buddy. Let me tell you what. I bet you're against too, right? Yeah, let me tell you something. Oh, yeah, and juice, too. Guess what, Bob Inyok? I'll tell you something. Bob Inyok, guess what? I'm really seriously drunk, but anyhow. Check it out, though. So, I'm a garden variety sodomite. Bob Inyok.
Welcome back to Bob Inyok Live, 1-800-8-INYOK, 1-800-836-9278. The Randy and Rebecca Hayes Foundation has helped bring you the following program. This is not NPR, National Public Radio. So we're telling you about the 28-year-old guy who should be executed in a jail in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And he's in his cell on the phone. Now, I've told you about the restrictions in Jefferson County. When you're in that jail, you can only be on the phone for about 480 minutes per week. They limit you. Just 480 minutes a week, local. Long distance, you get another 400 and some minutes. So local, only 480 minutes a week. So that was tough to live by, you know, but when you're in jail, you gotta deal with it. So this guy, who should be dead by now, he wasn't dead then, should be dead by now, he's on the phone with an 18-year-old girl, he's 28, and he's directing two children in what sex acts to perform, and the 18-year-old is photographing it. Shanquanda McMichael is her name. And so the police arrested her when she brought photographs, the child porn photos, to the jail for this Coleman, 28-year-old Coleman, to see. Now, I mean, we're ready. The shadow government's ready to execute these people. Think of all the money we'd save. Think of all the fun we'd have. I mean, think of the ratings you could get on Fox News. Wow. 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. So, and tied in with that, of course, is this priest in California who was accused of having improper sexual relations with a teenager. I wonder what proper relations would have been. Why do they put it like that in USA Today? Why do they put it like that? Why don't they just say he was accused of having sexual relations with a teenager? All right. Instant message here. How do you punish an inmate who commits a crime? Answer, no basketball for a month. Come on. They would not be that harsh. That's just too harsh. Hi. Let me interrupt the story from the priest from California to respond to this instant message guy. When I was in Denver County Jail, I was on the morning work crew, and we'd get up at about 3 a.m. to prepare breakfast for the rest of the jail. There was, what, close to 2,000 inmates in that jail? Something like that. We'd get up at 3 to make breakfast for the other inmates, and they'd had breakfast about 4 a.m. or 4:30. I forget what time, just real early. They do that. I don't know why. So, and then you had to go in to prepare lunch, and we started preparing lunch at 8 a.m. And the guys have lunch about 9:30, quarter to 10, they have lunch. I don't know why. Anyway, I needed to prepare for a jury trial I had coming up, and I was going pro se. That's Latin lingo for I was going to represent myself. I don't know why the judges and the lawyers speak Latin. I guess it's so they intimidate you into hiring a lawyer. I told the judge I was going to represent myself. And she said, are you going to go pro se? She said, do you know you'll have to voir dire the jury? Do you know what it means to voir dire the jury? And I said, what, ask them questions? And she said, well, yeah. Yeah, I could ask them questions. Why don't you speak English? You know, in Colorado, we have a law. It's in our Constitution. It says English is the only official language for official government business. Why is it in the courts they speak Latin? Could you figure that out? Why do they do it? Just to intimidate you for hiring a lawyer. So I had to be my own lawyer coming up in a trial in about 3 days. And the work schedule was so crazy that I just needed time to sit and think, write out my opening statement, my closing statement, my voir dire questions, and what I'm going to ask the witnesses. And I got to figure all that out. The hostile witnesses, how I'm going to handle them. It takes time because trials, they don't have much to do about what's true. They're mostly some kind of rigmarole system. It's no longer a justice system. Now it's just a system. So I went to one of the guards and I said, officer, I have a trial coming up and I'm my own attorney and I need to take off a few days to prepare for the trial. So what do you mean take off? Well, I mean, I need to not go and do the breakfast. I need to get some isolation. I need some solitary confinement, paper and a pencil, and not work for the next 3 days. He said, go to the cafeteria. This is 3 a.m. And 50 guys are going to the cafeteria to work in the kitchen. 50 of them. So go to the cafeteria. I said, officer, I'm sorry, but I need to take off for 3 days. I got to prepare for my trial. Go to the cafeteria, I said. Officer, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I'm not going to go to the cafeteria. I'm going to go to the hole. That's what they call the solitary confinement in the Denver County Jail. You go to the hole. I think the bad thing about the hole is you can't control the knob on the TV. Somebody else turns it to the channel. You don't have direct access to it. And each one person per cell, which many people prefer. So I say, officer, I can't, I'm not going to go to the cafeteria. I'm going to go to the hole so I can prepare for my jury trial coming up in a couple days. You're not going to the hole. You're going to the cafeteria. Officer, I'm not going to the cafeteria. I'm going to the hole. Go to the cafeteria. So I sat down. And we fought about it for about a minute. He said, go to the cafeteria. Officer, I'm going to the hole. He said, you're going to the hole. What is he going to do? Throw me in jail? I'm already in jail. Our legal system is inane. Public school teachers, what does inane mean? It's inane. Our legal system, our criminal justice system, it's no longer a justice system. Now it's just a system. So I went to the hole and I got to work on my jury trial. And by the way, I was acquitted of the most important charge. Now, I think, I can't remember exactly. You get it all confused after a dozen times in and out. But I think I was convicted in that trial of conspiracy to loiter. Conspiracy to loiter. That was a good one. That, I mean, that should earn a place in the history books. Conspiracy to loiter. Okay, so now back to the Catholic priest. Right? The Catholic priest is from California, the Reverend Oscar Pelles, 35 years old, from Stockton, California, where he's accused of having a proper sexual relationship with a teenager. Oh, did I say a proper? An improper one. And so the Catholic Church, which is, I guess, modus operandi for them, they moved him to Connecticut. Hartford, Connecticut, and he was sent to Hartford in November, and the police found him, and now he's arrested. And I guess I don't know if they've extradited him already or what, back to California. But they should know what they're doing here. Why didn't they move him to Boston? He would have blended right in. They would have never found him. He could have went to Ireland. That would have been good. Go to Ireland. I pastor Denver Bible Church. Maybe we'll take child molesters and give them a job as Sunday school teachers. Oh, no, wait a minute. Our elders wouldn't allow that. Why do they allow it in the Roman Catholic Church? Allow it? It seems to be standard operating procedure. Homosexual priests molest altar boys. Move him somewhere where he can be a stealth molester, where he can be a predator and nobody knows about him. All right. Now, divorce. Here in Colorado, the legislature wants to reduce the divorce rate. So this plan, it's been around for a while. It hasn't gotten too far. And now we've got state lawmakers who are trying again to pass this bill. And it would delay any divorce. If you have children, your divorce cannot go through for 1 year, and it has mandatory counseling. Now, how's that? Now, would that work? How would the counseling be? What do you think? Government-mandated marriage counseling. Oh, brother. Oh man. Probably the counselors would suggest that they try out some bisexual S&M, and maybe that would reinvigorate their marriage. That might be in there. We'll be back after this.
Bob Enyart teaches the Bible like few others, and one of the best ways to introduce yourself to Bob Enyart's unique style of Bible teaching is with the video Mount Moriah. It's a 2-hour feature video that answers all kinds of questions about the resurrection. Is there evidence for the resurrection still in existence today? Well, this entertaining and professionally made video will show you evidence of Christ's resurrection that has remained for 2,000 years. It proves that 1,500 years after God carved the law in stone, He carved grace in stone at Mount Moriah, and you can answer those who ask, those who doubt the resurrection.
Most people choose their long-distance company right after they see one of their funny ads on TV. At Lifeline Communications, we think that you'll choose your long-distance company for an entirely different set of values. It's true that Lifeline's rates are now 12 to 27% lower than the competition, as low as 6.9 cents on weekdays and as low as 4.9 cents on Sunday. But we're the only major long-distance company which gives away 10% of its income to spread the gospel. And we're the only long-distance company recommended by thousands of major ministries all over America. Plus, if you switch right now, we'll give you 100 minutes of long distance free. So what do? If you're serious about saving money and promoting the kingdom of God, you can do both with Lifeline, long distance with a higher calling.
Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931.
Bob's monthly Bible study. Join up, folks. Every Sunday night, we record a Bible study here in Denver, and we're going through the entire Bible. You can sign up for $24.95 a month. We send out 4 tapes a month every month. We distribute tapes right now to over 100 families around the country. Please join up. $24.95 a month. We can send them out automatically. If you sign up by credit card, give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-NYARD.
Oh, I was just handed this order that was printed out. Shipping confirmation. Goshen, Indiana. Somebody ordered the plot, the manuscript we have, an overview of the whole Bible. And Bob, love your show. Da, da, da. Oh, isn't that nice? From David. Thank you very much, David. And we'll pass that on to the right authorities. So, divorce. How do you lower the divorce rate? Well, there's so much in our culture that destroys marriages that increases the divorce rate. But the most direct things you can do are not things we're ready to do anytime soon. But for example, recriminalize sexual immorality. But even more direct than that is to get rid of no-fault divorce. I don't know if we have that in every state. We have it in Colorado and many states. No-fault divorce. Just like we have no-fault car insurance. That's our culture. No fault. We have Andrea Yates' no-fault child disposal. No fault. It's not her fault. That is our culture. No-fault divorce. No-fault car insurance. Why don't we have no-fault fishing? Why can't we have that at least? Why can't you have no-fault fishing? No-fault hunting. Why is it it's only no-fault messed up things? Why can't we have no-fault nice, traditional, moral, Christian activities? No-fault spanking. Temporary insanity. Yes, Your Honor, I spanked her on the backside, but I was crazy! I went nuts! Why couldn't that be a defense? No. So no-fault divorce is wrong. If one party is, let's say, unfaithful, and there's children involved, and then so often that party is the one that sues for divorce because they're just sick of the other party, and the party of the first part says to the party of the second part, I'm sick of your part, and they part. And our judges, they don't make any judgment, no moral judgment. If the husband is having an affair with a secretary, he prefers the secretary because she's younger, and then they go to child custody, that's irrelevant. If the wife is having an affair, and the husband was faithful, and they go for child custody, that's irrelevant. It doesn't matter who was having an affair. That's irrelevant. You get joint custody. If the one party is having an affair and smoking marijuana, you get joint custody. Okay, so you got to split the marijuana. The system is utterly broken. No-fault divorce is a big mistake. If one party is having an affair and there's a divorce, then the other party, the innocent victim party, gets custody of the kids. They get custody of the kids, and they get the house, and they get the money, and they get the property, and they get everything. And if you want to talk about a major motivator for not having an affair and not destroying your marriage, give the aggrieved party everything. Now, that'd be neat. That'd be neat. You broke the covenant, then you lose out on the fruit of the marriage. That's it. You break a contract, you don't get paid also, you lose out. And then we'd have a lot less of this kind of behavior. So, but in Colorado, our legislature is considering a bill that would put in a one-year delay. That's so the couples could beat themselves to death and then it would clear up the docket. The one-year delay and mandatory counseling, that would probably be weekly counseling every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock, and it costs each person $35, so that as they're going through their divorce and living in separate apartments, one home and one apartment, and they're both going broke as it is, and that extra $70 a week, boy, that adds up, huh? $70 a week? That's just so they could go another $300 a month, just make sure one or both of them go bankrupt, and yeah, that'll work. That'll really work well. What a plan. First, they pass the laws that destroy the marriages, and then they start tinkering. And why not just abolish all your laws that you've passed that are all wrong? Start over. Wouldn't that be better? Wow. All right. Now, could you believe it? In Michigan, there's a death penalty trial. In Michigan. This is amazing because Michigan doesn't have the death penalty, yet in Grand Rapids, Michigan, somebody's on trial and facing the death penalty. How? Why? Because it's a federal case. Now, the last time anyone was executed in Michigan was in 1938. And since they abolished the death penalty in Michigan, I bet they haven't had any murders in Michigan, especially in Detroit. Especially in Benton Harbor, Michigan. I wonder who in the studio audience has ever gone to Benton Harbor on the coast of Lake Michigan? East, southeast, corner? No? Cheryl and I were in South Bend, Indiana. We had a weekend to ourselves, which is rare. And we looked on a map and we thought, let's drive up the coast of Lake Michigan. Let's do that. We'll go up to Holland. We'll go up further. We'll just have a great weekend. And the first place we circled on the map was Benton Harbor, Michigan. Just a little inlet there. It just looked like it'd be a gorgeous place. So we drive a couple hours, get to Benton Harbor, Michigan. We thought we had gone to Beirut, Lebanon. It was a bombed out, burned out. Every third house was either burned out or blown out the window. How do you blow out the windows of an entire house? What, do they have thermobaric bombs there? So we were scared to death to eat in Benton Harbor. So, of course, we didn't. We went through. We looked for the first town where the homes were basically intact. We had lunch there. And I asked my wife, that was the first time I asked the now famous question, what came first to this town? A burned out home, an abandoned home, or a welfare check? What hit this town first? An abandoned home or a welfare check? And the homes were gorgeous homes. You could tell the architecture of them. And the schools that we saw. And the town courthouse. They were beautiful buildings in their day. Of course, the schools, I don't know. How could you call a concentration camp headquarters a beautiful building? I don't know. But they were beautiful buildings. Tremendous amount of money and wealth went into building up that town. And it turned into hell on earth. And what hit Benton Harbor first? an abandoned home, or a welfare check. Welfare demolished that community, as it has a thousand others across this country. So in Michigan, they don't have the death penalty because they don't have any murder in Michigan, I guess. They haven't executed anybody since 1938. They especially have had no murders in Detroit, especially. So now they've got a guy on trial. Federal prosecutors are seeking the death penalty for a man charged with killing a young single mom. And she had accused this guy of raping her, so he killed her. Now she can't testify against him. That happens even inmates order hits on people, right? Happened to my friend. And he was shot in the head from an inmate-ordered hit. So Michigan outlawed capital punishment in 1846. Now, how did they end up executing someone in 1938? 9 years after Michigan became a state, it became a state in 1837. 1846, they outlawed the death penalty for all crimes except treason against the state. But of course, some federal crimes carry the death penalty, and regardless of what state they occur in. So, and the trick here was this woman was murdered, and you had to get it not as just a murder, but a violation of her civil rights. Maybe she was Belizean or something, and it was some kind of racism. She was Belizean, and it was a violation of her Belizean civil rights in Michigan. And so therefore, they might execute this guy. Of course, we hope that they do. That would be great. Now, where was Jeffrey Dahmer? He wasn't in Michigan, right? He was in Wisconsin? Where was he? Minneapolis? Minnesota? I think it was in Minnesota, Jeffrey Dahmer. He's the homosexual cannibal mass murderer who was beat to death in jail. See, the system works. See, the system works. Hi, you're on the air with Bob and you're live. Can I help you?
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Jerry,
hi.
It was Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
In fact, my brother and sister-in-law, when they were going to Marquette,
yeah,
they saw the news on it.
Yeah.
Later on, after they had gone away from the school.
Yeah.
They're like, we lived right down the street from them.
Oh, no. Remember, he had one young teenager, a boy. I don't remember the age. He basically was raping him in his apartment. The boy ran out the front door naked, and two cops found him running out the door into the street naked, and the cops brought the naked teenager back and gave him back to Jeffrey Dahmer. And in their defense, they said, well, we thought it was just a homosexual lover's spat. Oh, with a man and a teenage boy. Naked in the street, and the cops bring him back. Jerry, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Sharpest audience in the country. Instant information. That's what's fun about doing a live show on radio. Hey, and on the internet. We get it on the web too. Thank you guys out there in Radio Land and on the web for all the information you give us here at Bob and Yurt Live. Remember, the Randy and Rebecca Hayes Foundation has helped bring you the previous program. This is not NPR, National Public Radio. I just hate the way they say that on that no good radio network. That they've got a woman and a guy, and they take turns, and they say, this is NPR, National Public Radio. It's like, what are they doing? What? They're just so weird. And Terry Gross, this is fresh air. I pictured Terry Gross as a demon in hell with fire and brimstone coming out of her throat saying, this is fresh air. Terry Gross, the way she says it, this is fresh air. Just fire and brimstone as a demon in hell. This is fresh air. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.